Tailwind Nutrition. Scott Warr, Tailwind.
What do you think of when you think of Tailwind, Don?
I think of safety, Scott, because it takes care of me. It takes care of my nutrition. It takes care of my electrolytes. It takes care of my race. But let's not ask me. Let's ask Billy Yang, who's happened to be sitting right next to us, preparing for the biggest race of his life, Western States, thinking a lot about hydration. Give us some tips.
Biggest race. I just had a mini panic attack.
Here, take a drink of this Tailwind.
Do you need to hydrate?
It'll help you.
Well, speaking of safety, I think about Tailwind as the pacer that you're allowed to have for all 50 miles, 100 miles, whatever it may be, because Tailwind will always be at your back, right?
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Ooh, Tailwind is your best pacer. Ooh, yes. I like that.
Yeah, Jenny, do you hear that? Came from Billy.
Use that as a marketing tagline.
So let's talk a little bit about your hydration on runs.
Let's. Well, I you know, when it comes to hydration, it is not something you can skimp on, and it is, especially on those long, grueling, hot, as we're approaching the summer months, definitely have more than you think you might need. You know, we're talking 2-liter bladders, we're talking a handheld, and, you know, when it comes to races, I learned this trick. And it's not really a trick, but preparing for Angeles Crest in some of the warmer canyon sections. Mm-hmm. Angeles Crest has it. Western States, I've heard, has a couple of canyons.
Yeah, one or two.
One or two. Okay.
Or three.
Sometimes it's nice just to have a bottle dedicated to dousing yourself and keeping yourself cool on your neck, over your head, on your wrist. And I learned this tip from my good buddy Colin Cooley, who used it at Angeles Crest.
You probably don't want to douse yourself over the head with Tailwind Nutrition because you'd be a little sticky.
No, not with Tailwind. Those are valuable liquid. No, you don't want to.
Absolutely. Hey, it takes, and go ahead and drink early and often. I think that's something that you had mentioned a little bit earlier.
How many times have you, and I'm sure we'll all lie a little bit, but how many times have you been caught out on a run and you ran out of liquid?
Yeah, it's happened to me a handful of times when I've had to stop and beg hikers for a little bit of their water.
It's not a good place to be in. So Billy has a really good tip. It's better to take more than not enough.
It takes more time to deal with cramps than it does to take a pee stop, right?
Yes. And you'll only be, you know, heavy at the start of the run. You know, as you consume the liquids, you'll get down in weight. So
that's something to look forward to.
Yes,
it's a goal. I want to get these bottles emptied, so I'm done.
Something to work on. You know, we use a lot of things out on a run or a race to not distract us because we need to stay engaged. But concentrating on something like that can be a good tool.
Yeah, and Tailwind has a lot of different flavors. They have 5 flavors. I don't know if you can say 5 flavors. I have 4 flavors and a naked.
Scott, I just ordered a replacement for the one that I borrowed from you. And then,
thank you.
Yeah, Raspberry Buzz caffeinated and a...
What did you buy me?
A naked.
What did you buy me?
The caffeinated, what I borrowed from you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so coming back,
full
50 serving size. Yeah. Yes. Happy to do it. Thank you for loaning it to me.
Go to tailwindnutrition.com. You can get you can order there. They have expanded throughout the country and the world, so you can find it at stores.
I have seen on their map. Have you pulled up their website?
I have.
And it is just littered with locations of storefronts.
Billy, is there a place down in Southern California where you can buy Tailwind at a storefront? Do you know?
Not that I know of, but
I'm sure there's one.
If they don't carry it, I'll make sure they do. They get on it. Like I said, it's your best friend out there on the trails, and I carry the single serve packets with me, and it is super convenient and super easy to get down.
So go to Tailwind Nutrition, take the challenge, take in some electrolytes, some calories, and
before you end, I want to say direct people. Today, I watched a Billy Yang film.
Oh, okay.
It's a short clip. It's probably 8 minutes.
Six minutes.
Seemed like it was a half hour. It was that good.
It's really a bad thing, isn't it?
No.
It was so long and drawn out. I could barely even, I had to put pause to collect myself.
Maybe I watched it twice. Who knows? A little video of Anton Krupicka.
Ah.
And the it's a series titled 15 Hours.
Yes.
Go to BillyYangFilms.com, or you can just go to YouTube and type in Billy Yang.
Now go out in Tailwind.
Mas.
Mas.
Are we recording? Dr. Romanoff, you're probably very experienced at professional interviews. This is not one of them.
Come on. Don't put yourself down.
We are very casual. That's a good word.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And it was a miserable, miserable day.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Sally McCray.
I'm Billy Yang.
And I'm Ann Treason.
And we're sitting here at Western States Training Week, and we need to excuse Scott Warr. Scott Warr is not here, maybe doing some trail maintenance or something honorable, certainly. Mm-hmm. But we're sitting right here on after day two of Western States Training Weekend.
Mm-hmm. And where are we?
Where are we?
Stone's Brew.
Stone's Brew. So
it's a lovely patio area.
Yeah. If you have been at the Forest Hill Aid Station and you're cruising towards California Street to make that great left-hand turn, we're right out in the most beautiful environment, sitting on a porch on a deck. Going to have a little discussion about the trail.
Yes.
So welcome listeners, and welcome to our guest here today, Ann Treason. So thanks for coming, Ann.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we each came with a few questions, I think. Right. Well, I've got a question. Now, the other night we were having dinner, and I had a question, and I didn't propose it to you two. I didn't want to let it out of the bag. There are motorcycles that travel past you. I didn't want to let it out of the bag, but I just want to start with this one. In a 100-mile race or a 50-mile race, but we're just going to use 100 to make it easy. Do you enjoy the first 10 miles more or the last 10 miles? That's going to toss that around the table. Well, that's a good question, Si. Why do you give me that look as if it's not a question at all? There's your beginning of the race where everything's optimistic and nothing can go wrong within 10 miles. Mm-hmm. Or do you enjoy that last 10? You know, when you look back over the race and it kind of goes through your head a little bit and you celebrate internally, but there may be a few struggles because you have 90 miles on you or 40, whatever it might be. So with that stated, Billy, you look like you have at least half of a thought.
I have an answer,
it.
Yeah.
Good, good. Let's toss it around.
Definitely the last 10.
Mm.
I love that feeling of, when you can smell the barn,
mm-hmm.
when you know you've put in the work and you kind of think about the day and how it played out and you're just, you have that singular focus of finishing and how good it's going to feel and what you're going to have and just to stop, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love that feeling. And when you have the legs to really push yourself and run, and you're able to run, that's the greatest feeling in the world.
Mm. Either one of you two have a thought on that?
I'm definitely the last 10.
You're last 10, or how come?
In the beginning, I'm not a morning person. So it's all, and everyone's so hyped mm-hmm. that you're like, I don't want to get that hyped because yeah. you know it'll like drain all your energy. So it's really the first 10 is like probably my most miserable part of the whole. And even the last 10, I don't focus like it's last 10 because uh-huh. then I don't let myself, even at States, even think about the finish till I get to the White Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Which for people who don't know, the White Bridge is like, what, a quarter of a mile from
yeah.
the track?
Yeah. Yeah.
From it's the on track. The road. Yeah. You're not even in the mountains anymore.
Yeah, you're not in the... I don't let my pacers even talk about the finish till we get to the White Bridge. It drives yes. them crazy. They'll be like, oh, you've done so well. And I'm like, we're not talking about it till the White Bridge.
Yeah, because there's still a climb right here.
Yeah.
And it looks like Mount Everest.
I call it an anthill.
Yeah.
So, Sally, before you answer, yeah. let me throw mine in there because I think everybody yeah. seems to be going to the last 10. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say... I thought of the question because the first 10 is just optimism. You know, nothing has gone mm-hmm. wrong. Everybody is happy, pleased, fit. Nothing is, there aren't any blisters or stomachs that are sour. Everybody is upbeat. And I kind of like that optimistic, what's going to happen today? What's going to roll out for me and the people around me? And kind of, I like that excitement that starts at the very beginning. So I do love that first part. And they're bookends. I kind of like them both for the reasons mm-hmm. you two have stated. But Sally, let's hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I think the first 10 miles, I almost like want them to be over
mm-hmm.
quickly because I'm still trying to find my legs, mm-hmm. and settle into a pace and kind of read what's going on around me. And I think as the race goes on, there's an intensity that increases. So when mm-hmm. I think of the last 10, I don't know if it's the word enjoy that I would use, but it's such, I feel like that's like the most intense mm-hmm. part of the race. So I'm in like a really focused, I mean, you hate that you still have 10 miles left because you're hurting, mm-hmm. but there's so much intensity in that. I mean, and I had to race at mile 96. I got caught.
Right.
I was in ninth place, mm-hmm. and that was terrible. You don't want that. But I like in the intensity too. It's just.
But looking back, yeah. don't you like that you got caught and you could test it? You got tested.
Yeah, I was tested big time. I didn't think I had that in me.
Yeah, and now you know.
Yeah. Yes.
All of a sudden, I hear the coach yes. talking. Like, yeah. So for those of you that don't know, Ann Trason is coaching Sally McRae this year for her second mm-hmm. Western States. Why mm-hmm. did you choose Ann, Sally?
Well, for obvious reasons.
Well, what are those obvious reasons?
Well, she's in my opinion, and I think a lot of people's opinion, because I've read about it, but the most incredible ultra runner in the history of our sport, both out of male and female, just based on not only just her accomplishments, but just the way that she raced mm-hmm. is incredible. And I think even before running Western States, I remember Ann and I had a conversation on the phone because I was like so freaked out about the first climb. And we talked for like an hour about it. This is before she coached me, but she gave me all this time. And then a few months after that, I didn't have like the best year last year. And I knew a big part of it was because of a lot of stress I was dealing with just in my life as a whole. And my body was falling apart. I mean, even before I got to States, it was falling apart. And I just felt like I came into October. It was in the fall. And I had this conversation with myself, and it was pretty much, you know, if you're going to take what you have seriously, then you need to be serious on all details about it, not just throwing out good workouts here and there. I need to be consistent and strong all the time, but I wanted to be better in every aspect of my training. And so I knew I needed a coach that one would understand me. I probably am not, it takes me a while to really like trust people. And I think as a coach myself, like there's also that side of me that's like, oh, I'll just do it myself, you know? Mm-hmm. And, but I remember the initial conversation I had with Ann, and I saw her the day after I ran Western States, and I just thought, I feel like that she would get me and that she could coach me really well. And, it's like the best decision I've ever made, because it's been incredible. And I know we talked about it in the last podcast, but there's like a lot of, it's not just my running, you mm-hmm. know, there's so many other details about training and becoming a great athlete, because I want to be a great athlete. I don't just want to have a good race here and there. I want to do everything well. And Ann knows how to approach the whole game plan and make sure that I'm taking care of myself.
That's the hardest thing is getting Sally to take care of Sally.
And is it safe to say that this is not just a typical coach-client relationship?
No, every single one I have is very personal, and every single one is just as important. Maybe Sally doesn't want to hear this, but each one of them is as important as Sally. And when I take someone on, their dreams become my dreams, and I'm just to help this guy that did a 200-mile race. I would never do it, but I was so into what he was doing. Yeah, it's an honor to be coaching Sally. I really feel that way, but that was the biggest thing we worked on, and we're still working on it. I mean, I'm like the pestering person. I know, like, how was your workout? I don't care. I know she's going to do that, but did you get your massage this week? Like, are you stretching?
Yeah, I asked that not to really, you know, of course, diminish your relationship with your other clients, but there's so much of the two of you guys that kind of seem similar to me, both in your personalities and certain things with your, you know.
Well, the best thing that's happened out of this is I think I've become, like, we're friends. And everyone that I deal well with when I'm coaching, I become friends with. So, and it's just a joy to me. I mean, I thrive off of it. So, yeah, I've really, this has been a great journey for me on a personal side, is getting to know her and getting excited again about States from a different angle than a lot of the people I'm working at. And it reminds me a lot of my past, and so it's wonderful. And she's a wonderful person, so that's one of the things. You have to be a nice person for me to take you on.
So do you get more nervous for your races or for your clients' races?
I have never been so rewarded by this last couple of years that I've been doing this, it's much more meaningful for me, mm-hmm. to the people that I'm dealing with. So I get way more nervous, and I care more now about the races that I ever did on a personal level. It's a little shocking to me, but that's the real truth. It's, I don't know. I guess it's just the way I am.
I know we can get, you know, as a society, we've all experienced or watched somebody close to us get very emotional about a football game or about their team, and their weekend is ruined if their team doesn't win. So you can get emotionally tied into a person or a team. So I can imagine that there can be some of that same thing when you're coaching and working with runners.
Well, beyond that, she's probably more akin to like the head coach, you know? And you're kind of directing the players on the field, right? And you're invested that much.
I am very invested. And I love them all. I mean, it's I have this little circle group on Facebook. And I have the people I'm working with are my alumni that I've graduated. Because really, I think if I do a good job, then I'm not needed anymore. So my whole thing when I'm working with someone is I teach them everything they need to do. And then they can do it on their own. And I think that's really the best thing a coach can do, is to have people that say, nope. I can do it on my own. So that's my goal, ultimate goal. And I have a little group and they stay on. And I love my little circle group. It's called Anne's Running Circle and it's so fun. It's like very supportive. It's very me, which is, that's what I think anyway. You could ask them, but I think it's just, we all encourage each other with all the crazy stuff, which I think is crazy. Like Ken doing the pigtails, and there's another guy, Greg, who's doing the, this 888K as we speak right now in Vermont race, and he love it. I wouldn't do it, but he loves it. And I haven't heard from his dad, and his dad's crewing him. Believe this, he has 240 hours to do this, and I'm like, why isn't his dad telling me? And there's no ultralight feed. I'm like going nuts. I'm gonna like probably go call. I'm gonna call his dad. What's your son doing?
Hey, so for coaching, what's the number one thing that you find people need some redirection with? Have you found in your, and Sally, weigh in on this too, because you're a coach as well. So what are the, if Billy and I came to either of you and needed coaching, what's the first thing that you would look at as you find most errors happen with runners without coaches?
I can tell you what Sally's was.
Well, okay, now that was my way of asking, what's wrong with Sally and what did you fix?
There's several, actually.
Hers was, she just wasn't taking her easy days easy enough. And I love that she started doing this. It's like so cool. It's like I knew when she finally got it, because the very few women do Strava. Uh-huh. And Sally does, which is interesting in itself. I have a lot of guys that love the trophies and da, 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 but she's like, because then they're competitive, right? And they're like, oh, what da, da, da. And she called them mitochondrial like baths or something like that. And I'm like, she finally got that those are easy days, because she'd be showing me like what she did is an easy day. I'm like, that's not easy. She's like, I can't run that slow. And I'm like, learn.
And that's been helpful for you, Sally, slowing down a little bit?
It has. I think...
just on easy days.
Yeah, just on easy. I would probably categorize myself as an intense person. Mm-hmm. So I think it's...
What?
You think?
I think it's hard to not do everything intensely. Like if you... And especially the things that I really love. You know, I love running so much. And so to go out and... to not be intense, but at the same time, I'm understanding too that like it takes discipline to run easy, and that's a certain type of intensity because you're really taking your program seriously. And so I kind of had to reteach my brain that okay, what I'm doing right now is going to help me run the workouts better.
Well, and also you need recovery. You can't just keep hitting your, you can for a while hitting your head against the wall, but eventually you need to recover. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, Billy, you're doing states.
Yes, huh? I am.
Do you like your easy days or do you take any easy days?
I'm just trying to wrap my head around banging your head against the wall as the, you know, like you do ultra run.
It's a cross training.
Yeah, cross training.
Absolutely. Yeah. Recovery's key.
So, I take it there are some tough days too on Anne's program. You're not going to just do easy all the time.
No.
You subscribe to some or prescribe some long days.
Yes,
some work
very
days.
Long days. And
Sally smiling
I
big
love
over
them.
Here.
Yeah,
they're my favorite.
I don't have like with Sally when you're really working with someone, you know you don't have to push them on there. It's more like holding her back, not to make her long days even longer. like yesterday. She had a lot of miles the week before, and I hope I'm not like, it's okay to talk about this?
Fine. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So she had a big week, and then she wanted to do 50 on Saturday, and I kept like trying. I'm not going to like say no, 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 but I was like, maybe you just want to do 30. And she's like, no, 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 I'm going to do 50. It's like finally, like, we don't decide till yesterday when she gets to mile 26 or whatever it was. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Yeah.
See, now Sally told me Anne had her doing 50. And
yeah, that was our original plan. But yeah. I think after my,
I didn't know she was going to do that many miles that week, because she came up here and she was going to do a couple days on the trail, and then I think like the second day was a little bit more mile, which is great because I think getting a lot of time on your feet, it was an awesome weekend for her. But she needs that week off. She needs to back off a little bit this week after that week. Mm. So there's a lot of play. Ultras are not easy. I mean, and the distance is so out there, and you have to listen to your body. So,
and it's easy in a week like this too, because you know you see a lot of your competitors. Mm-hmm. You know, so this is a training fun weekend, but you also, and I think obviously just being really competitive, you think about one or you know what's their training and how hard are they going, and I always want to tell myself, and even when I go out just in training runs, like, I will train harder. You know, I'm gonna train harder than everyone, and I want to make sure I do. And Anne's good at making sure that I'm not doing that every single day, that it's just, you know, I'm gonna train harder and longer, and that doesn't always transfer over well. But I do like to train. I love training. Mm-hmm. And I love the intensity within it and pushing my body. And I haven't been in this kind of shape in a really long, long time. And it took me a while to really, I think, surrender completely to Anne, like what it was, that, you know, the program, and just, you know, just trusting. And and I'm so grateful that I did. Like, she didn't back off and really guided me and is just so caring. I think that was the biggest thing for me. I think there was a point where I realized, I was like, she really cares about me. Like, mm-hmm. she really sees me. And she's checking in on all aspects of me as an athlete. And I'd said this the other night too, but it's like, I know I can talk to her about other things within being a competitive athlete. It's not just, you know, the pressure that you feel from the outside and, you know, expectations and so many different things that I can't, you know, I don't share. And so it's nice that I have that relationship with her, and I know she gets me. But I think too, I look at Anne, I think, you know, I look at her as a coach, but I also see her still as, there's fire in her eyes. Like, she is this incredible, she is an incredible athlete. And I think, you know, it's just part of her makeup. Mm-hmm. You know, you think of the best athletes across the board in all sports, you know, it's basketball, football, and it's like, that's been there since they were little kids, and it doesn't go away.
Something,
you know,
that drives them internally.
It's something that, yeah, it drives them. But, and so I think when I get that opportunity to talk to her, just like see her, it's just like this, it's awesome. You know, it's like, this is an incredible athlete. She gets it on every single level. And so I just really cherish the interactions that we get. But it is, I mean, it's there, you know, it doesn't go away, you know, whether you have 20 races a year or not, it's still there. And it's awesome to just sit in her presence and hear her talk.
Before we get off this coaching thing, what do you need to redirect to people with, Sally, in coaching? When they come to you, what's the first thing that you assess? Intensity, how many miles, nutrition, what kind of things, mm-hmm. their mindset, what do you look at?
Yeah, you know, one of the most important things to me, because I'll have an initial athlete interview, and mm-hmm. I actually don't even take them on as an athlete initially. I'll say, let's have this conversation, and then you figure out whether or not we're going to mesh well together, because there are loads of wonderful coaches mm-hmm. in the world. But they all have different styles and different coaching philosophies. You know, and I think that, you know, you have to look at people as individuals, and we're all driven and motivated by different things. So I can't motivate everyone by the same thing. And so if you can't, if that isn't there, if it doesn't click, And I always tell them, I was like, if you find, like, email me later. Don't even tell me now over the phone. But really think about it. If you think I would be a good coach for you, the most important thing to me is I get to see them as a whole, as a person, for who they are and what their life is like. Because if they're just looking for a training program, then go download one off the internet. Like,
yeah, I always tell people that.
It's like, but if you want to be coached, then I need to know you, because that's how I'm going to best coach you. So, you know, I remember I had a pilot. I coached a pilot a couple years ago, and his life looks completely different than the stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. I coach them totally differently. And so I think that for me, I also find that they want to, a lot of times they want to know that the journey that they're setting out on is going to be successful, and they want someone to believe in them, and they want somebody to, you know, a lot of times they'll have, this is a crazy question, I feel so lame. And I'll have these conversations, and they'll text me or email me later, like, thank you. I just needed to hear that. Mm-hmm. I just needed to hear that. I'm like, man, half the time it isn't even like the coaching. It's just the athlete needs to know, you know, they need that confidence, and for someone to instill belief in them, especially in the ultra community, when you don't have big circles of people around you all the time. I mean, maybe a handful do, but not everyone has the luxury of even having friends that are ultra runners or family that understands what it is that they're doing. And mm-hmm. a lot of times, you know, people tell them they're crazy and so I think sometimes you get athletes that come to you and they just want to feel like they're a part of something that's great, and that the goals that they have are doable. And yeah, it takes getting to know the person. So.
I can help but notice seeing Ann smile and nod when Sally started talking. I mean, do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, she does. That's like basically my introductory conversation with people when I talk to them. I also talk a lot about collaboration, because I want to take someone on who is willing to want to get back to me. And the worst client I can have is someone who goes AWOL. Hmm. And I don't like to have to say, hey, where's your training? What are you doing? You know, I like the interaction, because that's the only way you're going to get to know or grow with someone. So, but it's the same thing. There's so many good coaches. I always tell people, look, think about it. I send them a questionnaire. And yeah, I do the same thing. I'm like, I don't even want you to tell me on the phone. Think about it. And I give them, like, they're like, no, I'll do it right now. I say, no, I don't want to hear from you for 3 days.
A cooling off period.
Yeah, there's a cooling off period, because people get so excited and they think, oh, I'll take Ann on and my life will change. And I'm like, no, I also tell them it has to be patience, because ultras aren't going to happen overnight. So you have to, like, not think in 3 weeks you're going to become some great athlete. It takes years. It took me years anyway. So I just say, if you want to do this, you have to also realize it's going to take time. Mm-hmm.
Billy, I see you want to go some direction. Right. I have another coaching question, if it's all right.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Anne, who was your coach, or did you have one in the middle of the streak?
Not in ultras, but the people who had the most influence on me were when I was 12 years old. Because I'm such a dinosaur, okay? I'm like really old. So it was before Title IX, and you couldn't run on a girls' high school or cross country team. And so there was an ad in a paper. Jim and John Heiserman were putting together a girls' track team as an age group. Then it was AAU, now it's USATF. And it was like they did it totally as volunteers, and they were awesome. Hmm. And we'd go down like 3 days a week. And work out. And they influenced my life, because they gave back. They didn't get money for it. They didn't do anything. And they take us to meets. I went to L.A. And they opened my eyes to the running, and they made it part of my life. Hmm. So if I can give back 10% of what they instilled in me into anyone, I'll feel like my life was a success.
Did they follow your success and realize what you did?
I've been trying to find them. Huh. I've looked on Facebook. I know that John then went and he coached at Pacific. I grew up in Pacific Grove. He taught basketball, but I've been kind of looking on Facebook for him. So I'm hoping that I'll contact them again, because you're not the first person who's asked me this. And it would be so fun to talk to them.
Okay, listeners, get out there and find this person. We'll get it back to Ann. Yeah. Make this reconnection.
So, I just wanted to kind of reset. And when you were talking about it took you years to learn, Sally and I were having a conversation on the trail, and she told me that you had actually DNF'd from Western States your first couple of times before you went on to win
14
times. Can you kind of take us back and to those who aren't in the know and historians of the sport, obviously, Ann Trason is somebody who has really tied in with the Western States race. So, maybe you can talk to that and tell us why you love this race so much.
You know, I don't know. It's there's something about the trail. I did American River 50 in, 85, and it was hot, and I hated it, and I've told the story a million times, but I really didn't like it. It was really hot. Maybe I did well. I can't even remember.
Someone you set just the course record.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
I do. Yeah.
I hated it so much I ran fast to get it over. Yeah.
Well, there's a little story behind it, but that's a different time. And I really, but then this guy, Aaron Wernham, you know, it's always like someone in your life that changes your life. This guy totally, he had done Western States. He was 19. And he kept saying, you got to run this. And I was like, oh, God, no way. It's like really far. I never even heard of Western States when I did AR. And I swore I was never doing another ultra. And he said, just run the first 30 miles. It took him, that was what AR's in April, September. And it's like it happened yesterday. And I just ran the first 30 with him. And I loved it. It was like, I don't know, I felt like I was a hawk flying. And I left him. Okay, he's like, you know, we're trying. And it wasn't marked. And somehow I found Robinson and didn't get lost. And I fell. I remember falling in all this like dust, and I was just full of like dust. I was like, this is the best time.
I love it.
Yeah. And I don't know. Just after that, I just said that I'm going to spend my life doing that. And you're right, Bill. I didn't finish the first 2 years. I made a lot of mistakes, and it was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. Because one of the things I always ask people also to do is write out three things after every race. I'm into big threes. Like three things you learned, three things you do different, and three mistakes you made. And I have them send it back to me as homework. I'm big into homework, okay?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You see yourself,
Sally? I am. Always like, here's your little homework. But I did it because the second year I didn't finish, I thought my life was over. I just like went, and my parents had some property in the foothill. And I just sat there and I just wrote and wrote and wrote all the things I learned. I can't even remember all of them, but then, you know, all the easy stuff. I mean, and a lot of hard stuff. But I overtrained. I did everything you can think of. Not doing my easy days easy. I mean, I just did everything. Like, I didn't drink. I didn't eat, you know, and I threw up a lot and blah, 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 blah. And so I said, I'm going to learn from these. And it was a decision I made. I'll tell you, I learned more in those first 2 years than any of the other years combined. So it was a good thing that I, you know, then I honestly thought my life was over. I was like, what a loser. So I even got pulled at mile 93. If you really want to know the truth, they pulled me at mile 93 because I was so sick. Yay. I was 7 miles from the finish, and I was throwing up so much that they said she needs an IV. Yeah.
You're like severely dehydrated.
Oh, I was so bad.
Well, that also shows how tough she is, because people would have dropped out about 60 miles before that.
I didn't, and also I overreacted. I was a little dry. You know, there's a little bit of knowing that you can continue, but I thought, wow, I'd never been sick before, and I'd been throwing up since the river, and I get there, and I tell the doctor, I've been like, oh my God, I think I'm going to die. And he's like, well, you might, because they also had, if I had walked into an emergency room, right, at that place, they'd look at my vitals, and they'd say, this person's like, but that person was an ER doctor. And probably if I had known myself better, I probably said I could walk 5-7 miles, but I was like, oh my God, I'm just going to like, you know, throw up, and, you know, it's bile. You don't want to know all the details. It's kind of disgusting. But it was like, so yeah, they're just like, they clipped my wristband and I cried. I was like such a little, yeah, I was young.
Is that the worst spot you've ever been in a race in your career?
Yes. Yeah, when they clipped my wristband at mile 93, I just couldn't talk for like days. That's why I went away. I couldn't even like talk to my friends. I just said I have to go and find some place. And I knew my parents had this place in the foothills, and I went there for a week all by myself.
Having that behind you and finally completing the race and winning, like, do you remember number one?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't even going to do it. It's kind of another long story, but I was supposed to do this 100K thing, world championship, and it got canceled. Well, it didn't get canceled. It's a long story, but I was invited, and there was like South Africa thing, and they'd be contaminated, and they told me if I ran in it, I couldn't run for 2 years. So Norm Klein then said, if you ever have a problem, you can do Western States. And so I called him. When I found out, which was maybe 2 weeks before States the first year, and I said, I want in now. and people are going to hate this because now that wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay. So I signed up for States. First year I did it a week before. I hadn't run on the trail at all.
Oh, my God.
And that day I did. I ran to Last Chance and back a week before. And that was the only time I ran on the trail. And I think it also showed me sometimes you can get just too caught up in something and you're going to fail. So if you just kind of let it go, and I was training on the roads because I was going to do this little loop-de-loop-de thing in Holland on the roads, like some 10K crazy thing. And that's what I was training for. So I did all my road runs. They were all road runs.
Can I ask you, what was your first year at Western States?
I can't remember. What was it, 89?
Okay, it was sometime.
Yeah.
Before now.
Yeah,
so,
before now.
Right. So how was it to get into the race at that time? Because now it's, what, a 9% chance of getting in? You said the other day, Sally, you have to be a top 10 finisher to get really invited back like you're doing this year. Congratulations, Sally. How hard was it for the community to get into that to
Nothing
Western
like
States?
Nothing like now. And people would just ignore him, even hear me telling that he let me in. I think he got in some grief from the Western States board for that. It wasn't as hard. I think they started having a lottery sometime around that time. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you one thing. Norm, it was hysterical. He did nothing on... I mean, then there weren't, but he did nothing with computers. So you literally had to fill it out on hard copy, your entry filler, and send in a check. There was no ultrasound. It was so funny. And I just saw Norm on Friday with his wife, Helen, who's an incredible athlete.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know about Helen.
Helen Klein,
Yeah. And so... they still don't have a computer. It's impossible. You have to call them, and they get up, very, you know, she's 92, they have their hours, but you can't call like after 7 at night. And so they give me very, very much instructions. Like if I come, it's this hour because they're eating. They all have different hours they eat, both of them. They're adorable. It is so, and he has the best cactus garden in the world. Honestly, he really does.
It wasn't very long ago that Helen Klein set the record at CIM, a 26-mile, you know, the marathon in Sacramento. An incredible athlete. And I remember her coming through and seeing some of those photos.
She has one of the best. She's like just watching her.
Uh-huh.
The best biomechanics I've ever seen. I mean, she just was graceful. I mean, she did stays. I mean, Norm, people don't realize, he did so much for volunteerism. I mean, he changed the sport because when he came, he cared so much about the race, but what he really cared about was the volunteers. I mean, the runners were, but he wanted to make sure the volunteers were taken care of. And Wasatch first started, talk about history, where you had to do volunteer hours, but then Norm said you had to do them for Western. And it really, I don't think people were giving back, and I think it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
So I give him a lot of credit, and I don't think he gets a lot of credit for that.
Well, you have now. So, Norm, you receiving credit at this moment. Hey, what's your favorite part of Western States course? What section?
I love running from Robinson to the river.
Yeah?
Is it training? I don't think there's a better training and better run in the world. I love that. I did it so many times just in training. Like, I do it. I mean, even when I knew I wasn't going to race States anymore, I've been, I'm having a little knee issue. Just had knee surgery. But what my goal is... other than pacing someone at Rio de Lago, which I'm going to do if it kills me, is I want to run from Robinson to the river.
Yeah. I had heard from Dan Williams that was a regular standard fare. You guys would get up at Robinson and get to Driver's Flat, and that was every Saturday you guys would just do it.
Oh, yeah. He about killed me.
He said it the other way around. He said Ann about killed me.
No, because he'd be like, I was like, really? Well, I'd take his watch off. We would get up to Robinson, he'd go, okay, 7 hours. And I'm like, what? But he would always stop his watch at every, so that was like running time. And the first time, I was like, there is no way. I think we only did it once. But so I got to the point where I was like, I would literally, when he wasn't looking or trying, I'd literally have taken his watch off because he would drive me nuts. It's like, let's just enjoy it. And he'd be like, oh, we're like 5 seconds behind. Usually I love him dearly. He was a great mentor for me and a lot of other people. But yeah, that was our favorite run.
Yeah.
We do it a lot.
I told this Dan Williams story to these guys the other night, and it's one of my favorite when I think about them, and you could probably identify with this. It was one of the long runs, and it was hot, and we were coming in, and I was at the last couple of miles. I'm thinking, I'm so glad we're almost back. I just want to be done, and if I could snap my fingers and be in my car, I would. I was at that spot, and maybe somebody has been there before. And at that same time I was thinking that, Dan shook his head, looked at his watch, and he said, "Man," I said, "what's up?" And he goes, "it's almost over. I love it so much." And I thought, wow, what a runner. That stuck with me. I love it so much. I don't want it to be over.
Yeah, we were both the same way. Yeah. I mean, Dan and I, he was the second other Aaron than Dan because they were buddies. So they were like ganging up on me way back to get me to do the first Western States run. And Dan, the great thing about Dan, he's mentored so many people. He's a wonderful individual. I mean, mm-hmm. and he's still, he has knee issues too, but there's no one other than probably my dogs that love, I'm sorry, Sally, that love being out on the trails. I mean, he's just... I mean, it's been his life. I mean, he's done states 21 times. He would do it again. He's really big into lists. So he probably doesn't want people to know this. There's like a list from the first 100 to the last 100 that you've done in years.
Uh-huh.
I have no idea because I'm not big into lists. But I guess he wants to be in, there's like, he's 11th or 12th. So if he does one this year, he'll make the top 10 again. So he's going to do 100 this fall. He has 60. Great. You can run your age uh-huh. and still finish. So he has 66 hours. He could walk it.
Oh, my gosh. 66 hours.
And he's going to, I don't know, it's some loop thing. I don't know. But it's, like, so funny. It's so Dan. He's like, I found one I think I can finish. And my thing to him was, well, I'm not pacing you.
What's your favorite part of the course, Sally and Billy? You guys have got a good look at part of it this weekend so far. And, Sally, you've run start to finish. What's your favorite part?
Well, I'm going to piggyback what Ann said about Robinson Flat because that was my first real taste of being on the course. And yesterday was very misty, cloudy, cold. And so it kind of added to that magical feeling. Like once you step off the bus and you're just like, wow, I'm here. And then once you start descending and you just see the different passes and you see, you know, this line of runners snaking down and you're just like, you think about the Ann Traysons, you think about the Tim Tweed Myers, and you're just like, there's history attached to it, not just the beauty of the trails. And just so, I will never forget that those first few miles descending Robinson Flat, I was just like, I'm here. And yeah.
And that can go with any race, right? Wasatch or Mont Blanc or any of them. There's history on every one of those trails.
Not like this one, though.
And you think, well, I've got to report, you know, this is going everywhere.
Sure.
But this one, because you're here now, but if you were somewhere else, each one of those trails have the footprints of those amazing athletes and just finishers. And those footprints are just as important as the ones up front. Just mm-hmm. Life's accomplishments are made on some of these courses. People are honed and hardened and become, their character is defined by testing themselves on some of these courses, and I think that's just awesome.
Well, Sally, I agree with that, but I'm curious what Sally's now. I'm coming. What's your favorite part and least favorite part of the course? I also want to know least favorite.
I think my favorite part last year was Forest Hill because it's like so runnable and it's like wee and it's single track and it's covered with trees and then you can hear the river and it's just like beautiful and it's fun. But I think since I've been getting up on the trail more and more, and every time I do, she has me running the canyons more and more. I've started to fall in love with that. And I think the reason why is because it really tests me. And I like the, and I go out by myself. She'll always say, okay, text me before you start and text you when you finish. And I'll always say, I'll tell the trails hi for you. And so I'll go out and, you know, going out by yourself and doing these out and backs on the canyons, it's so challenging. The first time I did it, I remember as soon as I got to my car, I just laid on the ground. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, that was tough. And realizing like that was just like a standard run when she, you know, when she was training for the race.
And that made me think, because I remember hearing some time ago back on the trail, I want to ask you, now I'm sitting mm-hmm. in front of you, did you run the entire Western States nonstop, did not walk? Did you have a year that you did that? I think I heard that was a goal of yours not stop running.
Well, the goal, and I never did it.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
No. I don't run up every step of Devil's Thumb. Last year, though, I walked every single step.
There's not much difference. Not. One of the things I learned with that is if you run it, how much slower is it going to be if you power walk? And one of the things is learning how to power walk. But I also thought running, and I always ran it in training. Mm. Never took a step. Never walked ever, ever the canyons. Because I thought it made me stronger. I probably do it now differently now that I'm, you know, 54, but in the day, that was, we'd run it, just it mentally made me stronger too. Okay. But you couldn't, if you push yourself, I knew if I, you have to get toned into like kind of mentally where you are. I knew if I pushed myself sometimes, and it's so weather dependent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a cool year, yeah, you can run everything. I heard Jim King, I'm sure these guys are and gals are now doing it, running the whole way.
And it's 100 miles. I mean, and I think that's a good point, Anne, is it, in the training, it's great. Because you're like, I'm only doing, I think that the triple was like, what, 40 miles. But it's like, you're only doing the 40 miles, and that wrecks you. I mean, it's a good effort to run that entire thing. But to then put that into the middle of the race like that.
So sub 15 hours is the course record now, right? What is it, 14:53? I should probably know that if I'm going to bring it up. So just, I don't know where to...
Fix that in post.
I don't, you know, and also the course is a little different now, and that's what I try and tell people. There used to be, like, you'd get to Robinson and there was some more uphills. So there's a little bit different strategy for a lot of people. And they've done a lot of work on the trail. I'm going up in a couple weeks, and the first time Tim gave me a rake and told me to rake the rocks off the trail, I was like, you are kidding. What are we making this like? Someone's like, you know, you want people to be running faster than you do? Can we rake the rocks onto the trail, Tim? Literally, we do. We go up there with these things. Like, they're not even rakes. They're like, I can't remember, one of these McLeods, which they use in for fighting fires. They're really a cool tool. I love them. And so, yeah, we rake rocks, like, off the trail.
So that's one of the reasons that you think that times are so much lower now.
You know, I'm not going to ever say that, because I think Ellie deserves all the credit that she, you know, and all the people do. But it is different. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I'd probably approach it a little bit differently now. I think a lot more of it is a lot more runnable.
Do you think equipment has lowered? Do you think training strategies have lowered? I mean, let's kind of dig into why the course is running a bit faster.
Well, I think also, like, the packs are, I have a bad stomach. Everyone who probably ever ran with me knew that. And not having to wear a fanny pack, I don't know why we didn't come up with the vest. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't carry water. I don't like that kind of weight. But just having your, not ever having to wear like a fanny pack for me is huge. So,
so bottles on the chest more.
I don't put bottles above the chest. I just like carrying food, you know, and also like your handhelds. Like, okay, there weren't Carol Hewitt, who we had the aid station there. She used to make the first hand, the handheld grip things. She would make them out of like things like a dog leash and Velcro them. And if you were nice, Carol would give you one. And it was odd, but we'd never know there was no ultimate direction. Are you kidding? Yeah, you'd like run just with a bottle in your hand and it would just like slip. And I mean, there's a lot. I mean, you go back, there should be like a museum of like, it's like Smithsonian of what we used to do. It's crazy.
I'm going to drop another name, Dana Gard.
Oh my God, Dana's like, yeah, how's he doing?
He's doing great.
Is he?
Yeah. And so he told me about mustard bottles and syrup bottles and all kinds of things you guys were carrying.
Oh, yeah. Gordy would be out there. Sometimes I still think he does it. I saw him out there. He was like running with a gallon container once. I was like, really? Yeah. No way. Oh, there is a guy. I can't remember what his name is. He still runs with a syrup bottle.
Really?
And he still has the same rope on him. What's that guy? He had hip replacement. And he still runs, get this. You won't believe this one, Sally. I dare you to don't do this. But he has like cut off jeans. Yeah. And he does
runs
it.
In?
Yep.
No, thank you.
That's old school.
Old school. Yeah, we used to do all sorts of, like, the long shirt. You should see all these people, like, the long sleeve. And, I mean, it's not bad. They do it at Badwater.
Yeah.
But, like, some of these old pictures are hysterical. Oh, yeah. And Ray Clark and his, like, I think he used to race in, like, a Hawaii shirt. You know,
a
tropical shirt. Yeah. It was like his mantra thing. It would be like with buttons and everything.
Is there any current trend that you look at and you kind of shake your head at?
Let's not get started. So, all the like, oh my, someone was saying that. Oh, one of the people bought, because I hang out at Michigan, so I've been doing it since the 80s for Memorial Weekend. We camp at Carol's house. I shouldn't advertise that, but He was like, Rod Diggs, he's like, what is with this? He's like, I did Silver State, and what's with the leg thingies and the arms and the poles and like all the,
you're talking about like compression?
Yeah, that's what he would say, but that's how he talks to me. And he's like, and now they like have more than one iPod on their, like, because they're, oh my, in their ear. He's just like, what's happened to him? Why can't they just run?
Yeah.
This is true. Everyone's like gadgeted out.
Some of it's fun. Whatever motivates. That's what I told him. I said, hey, if it motivates them and they're getting out, who cares? But he just was like, oh my God. And I said, you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
But don't knock it.
Hey, when we look at different runners, they have different strengths and weaknesses. What would you say, and your biggest strength, and what's something you had to work on?
I think problem solving was my biggest strength. I never thought I was the most talented runner out there. Not even close. But I really didn't, Sally. But what happened for me is that you have to like deal with issues that you deal with. And I could problem solve. And I loved it. And so that was a strength. If something came up, I'd want to find out before it happens and how I'm going to deal with it. And kind of testing, knowing where your strengths and weaknesses were. I mean, there was one year, there was a woman from France who was ahead of me and going through the canyons, and she definitely was a lot stronger uphill. And I said, you know, I'm just going to start walking because I know my strength is when I get to Forest Hill, I can run the Cal Loop, and I'm just going to wait till then, and then I'm going to run as hard as I can down the Cal Loop, and then I'm going to catch her. Yay. And so, I mean, I didn't know if I could. I was shocked. But and then I was talking to you about Gary Neal. It was one of the years that my good friend Gary paced me, and he's like, let's get her. I'm going to, you know, kick. I remember when he said that. He's the sweetest. I mean, he was the most gentle person in the world. He's like, I can't wait to kick rocks in her face. And I was like, really? Because he got more competitive about my running than his. And I was like, Gary, shut up. But we caught her about Cal 2. And I ran like it was a, starting then was the start of the race. You know, I put it out. I just said, I'm just going to put it out here and see what happens because I know that's what I'm going to have to do to pass her. And I had a quiet confidence that I could take it easy in the canyons, and she was pushing herself. And I said, well, I'll just let her push herself a little bit here and see what happens. And that isn't like she was definitely had a better marathon PR. She won a bunch of European stuff. And I'm sorry, I can't remember her name. But yeah, that was a good test. So I don't know if that's answering your question.
Yeah, that answers it. And a weakness that you worked on to overcome because
Not a good hill runner.
Huh.
And I got, so I worked a lot on my hill climbing. And other people I was running with would always say, they were always like, use your arm more, and they'd try and get me to go to the gym and lift weights and get a little strength.
A proponent of strength training?
Oh, and my stomach. Let's not forget that. Yes, my stomach. It's like my weakest. Oh, I have a very sensitive stomach. So getting sick at States was really, it can stop a race.
Yeah.
So.
Sally, what's your strength weakness on that topic? Billy's coming around to you, so get yours ready.
My strength. I love it's what I love too. I really love downhill.
Yeah.
Technical, smooth, single track. I feel like a little kid, and I will do this, but I'll just throw my hands out the side, and I just want to wee. You know, it's just like that. It's the closest to flying, I think, that I experience, and I really, really love it. A weakness, and I think that anyone that probably even races against me, I mean, my crew too, they've really helped me with this, but is climbing. That's something I've always had to work on, and I think it'll be something I will always have to work on. But I know too, if, you know, to be competitive, you have to be strong uphill and downhill. And so, you know, the training that Anne has had me do, it's required me to do a lot of climbing. And,
there's a reason.
Yeah, there's a reason. And we've talked about it too. I'm going to tell her, like, I remember that's why we talked before Western States. I was like, there's this massive climb, and I know that I'm not going to be the first person to the top of the mountain. And how am I going to gain that confidence? And so, and that we have great mountains down in Southern California. So Wilson is one of my favorites because you can do, within this 35-mile loop, you could do 5-mile climbs. And so, like last week, it was good mental preparation. Okay, just you're going to climb for 5 miles straight. And, you know, and for me, I'm like, this is my weakness. I'm working on my weakness. And I know I need to get, you know, I need to continue to get better at that. But it definitely, it's very humbling. It's, climbing is very humbling. So,
Billy?
He doesn't have any. All strengths.
I'm so not interested in myself right now because I'm sitting next to Ann Trace and I just want to ask her a million questions.
Ask her a question.
I'm more curious. No, your strength
This will relate back to me. Okay. If you were to dispense a piece of advice to a first-time Western States runner, say, you know, about 6 feet
Yang.
Tall, good-looking Asian.
Yeah. Single.
Very hypothetical.
Yeah, single. Did you mute him?
I mean, it sounds like one of the key pieces of advice is to just take it easy on the canyons and then kind of push it more at Forest Hill. But is there anything else, if you were to distill it down further, like in terms of like breaking down the course or, you know, dealing with the conditions? Like,
have a good race plan. Get on a spreadsheet and really figure out what your goals are. Come up with 3 goals. What's your dream goal? That you really like, you're almost thinking you can get, but you know, you just, it would be like your dream goal. What else can I say? And then a goal you'd be happy with and one you'd be satisfied with, and work backwards. Like, okay, then how am I going to do the times at the aid stations? And what am I going to take on your nutrition and your hydration, your electrolytes, and how am I going to get there? And plan it all out so that you can see it in front of you.
Yeah.
And be patient and really be honest with your goals. Because a lot of people say, I just want to finish. And then, you know, that's yeah. But what's in your heart? What are you really wanting to accomplish here? So it's, and then by doing it by aid station, you're breaking it down aid station. That's a good, okay, the other big thing I would say, this is really big because I've seen this happen a lot, is thinking about it as 100 miles. It's not. And don't get to mile 50 and say, whoa, I have 50 miles to go. You are not going to finish. Bad idea. Because you'll sit in a chair and you'll go, oh, there's no way. So never think about it as 100 miles till you get to that white bridge. Then you can.
That is actually a weakness of mine to answer your question. It's the planning. There is still something to be said about, and because I'm not a Sally or an Ann Trace, and I'll never compete for that coveted, you know, M10 spot. So
it doesn't matter. What you're trying to accomplish is just as
important. But what I'm saying is, therefore I can rationalize in my head that I don't need to geek out with like splits and this and that and just be like, keep it pure, man, and just like run by feel.
You can do it if that's your strength, but having at least what it'll do to you is like dial in the nutrition, hydration, electrolytes. I call it EDE. I like to keep things simple. Because if you do it that way, that's great until you get down to the nitty gritty. And if you're not in the moment during Western States, something will slip by you. And you're not, if you don't take care of yourself, and at least it gets your mindset that way. If you're like someone who says, oh, I don't want to geek out, da, 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 then do loose times. But at least kind of figure out how you can kind of do it and take care of yourself. Because otherwise, if you don't, like, it's easy to space out. Mm-hmm. And if you do, then you might, like one dude I was helping last year, he got like so nervous and spaced out, he forgot to like take any food at Dunkin'. Where did he end up? He ended up in a chair in El Dorado, right? And that was the end of his. And he got to Raleigh. He's like, I'm so excited. I was just, I forgot to bring food and I haven't eaten since Red Star. And I'm like, oh, this is bad. So don't do that.
So you say running in the moment. Can we kind of dive into that a little bit? Because I think that's probably one of the key things that you have to practice or learn, and whether you have it naturally or have to develop it. Let's talk about running in the moment.
No, I like very simple. I'm like a little kid, but I had tell people they should get a mantra where you're checking out your whole body from your toes to your head. And you're like, how are my feet doing? How are my calves doing? My stomach? And you kind of get it before you have. And I tell people, I know it's geeky, but hey, ask yourself those questions and make it as fun as you want. Maybe you have your own little mantra. What your mantra isn't going to be your next person, but it keeps you focused to what you need to take care of yourself. Because it could be like things just work perfectly, but you're not going to be a great problem solver if you don't dial in where you're really at to know those conditions are going to happen. So
how do you recognize what's coming or what's going south on you? Practice is probably part of it.
If your stomach's feeling a little easy, you could say, it's nothing. Or you go, whoa, anytime my stomach even has a hiccup, it's like, okay, do I want Rolaids? Do I want near? What am I doing with my electrolytes? Or something as simple as feet. Mm. Yeah, like, oh, it's just a little rock. No, take that rock out now because it might move, it might not. But if you get a blister, you're done. Yeah. Or you can be.
It definitely make it a different race for you.
It would make it a different. It could be a lot more painful.
So stopping. How about gaiters? Are you a gaiter wearer, Anne?
You know, it depends. I mean, I in the snow, but my Achilles sometimes are so tight. So it depends on the kind, and it depends on the condition that states. Yeah, you could use those for the first 30. I wouldn't wear them the whole time because it is a little dusty up there. So I'm not. I would never wear gaiters the whole race. Not at states.
Uh huh.
But maybe that Marathon de Saab or something where you're in sand, I think that might be necessary.
What's the toughest race course you've ever been on?
Oh, you know, I'm going to say States is just because I push myself that hard. Mm. I know physically, you know, there are other ones that have more. I think that's what makes States so hard is it's so runnable. So you're pushing yourself more. But it's not, to me, it's more what you do inside than the actual course.
What part of the course, and maybe the answer is obvious, I don't know, but what part of the course do you think is the biggest surprise for people that are out-of-towners that come to Western States?
Well, probably more people concentrate on the uphills, and it's the downhills that'll get your quads. Mm. So all these people you read, you know, I get these Ask Anne questions and ultra, like, how do I train for the uphills? And I'm like, well, you know, you can use a treadmill. I mean, I know it's awful, but hey, you know, that works. You can do mall repeats. You can do whatever uphill. But it's the downs that are probably the most surprising and really the most quad-stopping detrimental thing that can happen. Sorry.
Blister-creating shoes.
Yeah, well, also your quads, if you can't move, you know, and your quad, like a lot of people now, like we were talking about, run too hard from Robinson to the canyons because they're all like, oh, it's finally downhill, and it's a lot more down than it used to be. They'll be finished, like totally done by the time they get to the canyons, and they can't go downhill. And if you can't go downhill at States, you're done.
Yeah.
There's a lot of down in the end.
Ultra Running Magazine Ask Anne column. Yeah. How long have you been doing that?
Oh, yeah, I guess over a year. I don't know. I was kind of just as a thing. I have dinner with, it's a group we've been meeting, and Carl Hoagland goes there, and I just was like, you guys are too serious. Because he was saying, how do I make the magazine better? Because he just got it from John. And I'm like, dial it down. Like, have fun. And he's like, how would you do that? I'm like, well, ask Anne. I thought it was a joke. And he's like, oh, sounds good. And then he's like emailing. I'm like, really?
It's a great column.
It is a great column.
Well, thank you. I mean, he makes me do be a little more serious. You should see some of the stuff I say. He's like, no.
We need the unedited version.
Well, it's like, no, a better question. You're like, no, I don't like that. So I do. I send him the questions I'm going to ask, and some of them, he's like, he loves like heart rate stuff. Oh, my goodness. Every month could be a heart rate question for Carl. He's funny.
Do you run with heart rate monitors, Anne?
I did in the day. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I thought it was a great training partner. But then I got to I wore it for 10 years and I knew what my heart rate was. It's like, why am I putting this on? I know what my heart rate is. But I think it was a really great tool.
You could look down and predict that heart rate within a beat or two.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Yeah. But I mean, if you're living in it, then basically I felt like I was. I never went on a run without my heart rate monitor for probably 10 years.
You know, on training runs, I can predict pretty well what my heart rate is. But on race day, it's different. It seems elevated. It seems different. And so I could see it on race day being an important tool. But
that's a good question. So at States, I wouldn't do that, Carl. Yeah. I wouldn't wear a heart rate. Well, you know, like Comrades or like one of those 10K loop things, I would for the first half. But at States, then it was so much problem solving. I'd really want it, and it would keep me from being in the now moment. Everyone's different.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just need that security blanket, and you have to figure it out. I know Carl loves his heart rate monitor.
How do you keep on a race, and this goes to anybody on the table, how do you keep from having another runner take you out of your own game? How do you stay within your space? Do you just, you know, you might be gathering up in a conversation that's interesting. You don't want to be rude and just not talk and back off or go forward. You don't want to expend energy to get away from them, but you don't want to lose your game plan by lagging back. I mean, how do you handle some of that?
I'd love to hear Sally's response.
Yeah, Sally. So hey. This is for you.
Yeah.
Because you're so sociable, Sally. Everybody wants to talk to you.
Well, but when I race, I am. It's funny because I know that even other people up front, like they'll say, and I'll read race reports. They're like, yeah, the first 12 miles, like I just talked it up with so and so, and we just caught up. And I am not like that at all. On race day, I'm not looking to have a conversation, you know, to click off miles.
Mm-hmm.
I get pretty deep into just like I really focus, and I feel like I'm so focused on the race every step, every mile. And I like to break it up into aid stations. So I'm so focused on, you know, this aid station, what this section is. And so if somebody is around me, if there's someone behind me or I'm coming up, and there have been times where people do try to talk to me. And a few times I just have said, like, I'm really sorry, I'm not much of a talker. And I try to be as polite as possible. Sometimes I just don't respond.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of hope that people just understand, you know. But I think if, you know, because I do like to race, it is also that day is where I'm okay with absolutely not caring at all what anyone else thinks of me. So I don't focus on what other people are doing, what they think of me, or, you know, I think that I try to just focus on just myself and running my best race and getting that finish line. My greatest competition is myself.
So you could actually put some earbuds in, whether there's music or not. It could be a nice way of just kind of shutting out without insulting anybody.
Yeah,
they're not plugged in.
It probably sounds like so harsh, but no. Like I genuinely don't. I don't allow myself to care about mm-hmm. what is going on around me. And I haven't always been that way. I think that, you know, I really do. I love people so much. I love being around them and being able to interact and stuff. But you know, especially even for really like a big training run or really important workout, you know, I don't run with people. I just really get into it. And but if it's a competitor that's really close around me, and I mean, this happened at States last year, I know I mentioned it earlier, you know, being so aware of Shaheen, you know, it was like mile 96 or whatever, and I was walking at that point. I was hurting so terribly, but as soon as she said my name, it was just, I think there's like this quiet, like a storm or like this fire, a fury that just is like raw, you know, you just kind of, that I don't take out. And I'm not like that in my everyday life. I can be intense, but I'm not like furious all the time. And so I think when I finish a race, sometimes I kind of reflect on how I was, like my state of mind, and it's exhausting. And I'm like, wow, like that was really like super intense. But I try to, that's just who I am on race day, I guess.
And what about you? What were you like on race day?
You know, I loved hearing what Sally said, because one of the things when I reflect back that kind of hurts me is I was exactly like Sally was, and then people kind of misunderstood and thought I was mean or, you know, antisocial or I don't know, all the things that were said about me. And I was really sad about that, because that wasn't who Anne was, but I needed to be like how I guess they call a game face. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like that game face, but that's what I needed to do. Mm-hmm. And it was I had to like really contemplate that a lot. Do I really want to race and be who I know I need to be, and know that isn't the person that I am every day? And it's nice to hear Sally can do that, because I really had a lot of hard time with that. That was probably one of the hardest things during my what they call running career, whatever you want to call it, that I had to deal with. It's like, wow, you read what people say about you, and it's like, I guess I can see where they're coming from, but that's where I had to go. And I still now wish I didn't have to go there, but I did.
And what do you, I mean, obviously people who follow the sport and know the history of the sport know of all of your feats and accomplishments. And yet, just from an outside observer, it seems like you're somewhat uncomfortable talking about it or addressing it. Maybe in your own words, like what are your thoughts on that?
I think a lot of that is just like kind of that thinking people knew me and or know, like, the, you know, I was this massive competitor, and I was just like Sally said, I was so competing against myself, and I loved that part. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what got me to thrive, was like, how can I always do better? Like American River, when I ran like 8.6 something or other, like whatever, when I set my best time there, I wasn't happy there because I really always like then set, I do what I tell people not to do, which is to set another goal. But to do that, I had to dig so deeply that I didn't even know that person existed. And I have to say, I sometimes joke with people. I said, that was my evil twin.
to Billy's point, when he was saying, I'm not a Ann or a Sally, mm-hmm. so I'm not going to be punching that card for the M10. Mm-hmm. So back to that comment, and then match and linking mm-hmm. that to your comment, that Ann, to your comment, that the race really is against ourselves. That is the number one competitor. Is, you know, it can be the mountain, it can be the course, but it really is ourselves as individuals is the competitor we're against. Because we can sabotage ourselves, we can support ourselves, and we're running against ourselves. There's so much time on a 100-mile race that you're by yourself. I mean, even though there's 400 people out there, you find a lot of time with you. So the person you're running against is that voice in your head or that shadow next to you.
Yeah,
you
know, I mean, just from talking to Anton Krupicka, one of the most surprising answers he gave me when he was talking about his most satisfying race was when he ran Western States in 2010, and he placed second. It was the first time he lost in an ultra race. But to him, he...
That's the Unbreakable movie year, 2010,
yes,
with Jeff Rose,
right.
J.B. Benna's movie.
Right,
yeah, okay.
And Jeff Rose ended up passing him just before Highway 49. And
incredible finish.
Incredible finish. And so it kind of took me off guard that somebody like that, who has all these wins, would cite a race that he lost in the last 4 or 5 miles, whenever it was. But to him, that's what sticks to him as his most complete race.
I think everyone, how many people start, that's how many races there. And I don't like this now, this term elite and all this stuff. I can't relate to it. It's like, what you're trying to do is just as important to me what Sally is. You have to find, that's where, like, writing your goals. Your goals can be anything. It can be time, it can do anything. And it's just as important. I mean, we're all towing the line. We all did whatever training we wanted to do, and we're all going to get out of it what we want to. Isn't that what life's about? It doesn't have to be like I have to be number one or number two. That's just what I got out of it, what Sally's getting out of it. But I love just that idea of finding out yourself. And so that's kind of what I want you to do. I mean, I'd be happy for that. I mean, I don't know. That's his fans being crazy. But.
And you don't have to beat on around the bush. If you want to be my crew, chief, like.
Thanks. Sally already asked me today. It was like, oh, well, okay.
Well, and I really like to know in your own words, so what is it about this sport that you just really, I mean, I get it just from talking to you briefly before this interview. You just seem to love the sport so much and the people in it. Can you, in your own words, explain why?
You know, I'm very social, which I'm surprised. I've learned that a lot in the last couple of years, how social I am. And I love the people, and I love that you can share a passion with the last place finisher and the first place finisher. I was just got connected. I'm not that social media person, but through Facebook, this guy, because I changed my phone number, and I guess we lost. One year when I did States, I finished, and then I was out at Roby Point, and this guy was like, had all these bottles and pack, and he was like, not going to finish under mm-hmm. 30 hours. Tony from Illinois. And so I told him I'd pace him. I had my little Tevas on. Someone asked me about sandal running in Huaraches lately. I literally told him, I was like so angry because I thought, I mean, I was literally like, I felt like there was steam coming in because I was like, this guy can finish. Mm-hmm. So I told him he had to like throw off his bottles, his pack, drop it right there, and I would pace him, but he had to break 30 hours. And honestly, that's one of my more memorable, probably the most memorable finish I've ever had at States. Is we broke 30 hours, and he's called me every year. Well, then I kind of lost contact with him a couple years ago, but we just talked. And he'd call, pick up the phone. That's why I couldn't find him. I could not remember his last name, because he just to me was like Tony from Illinois. I was like, hey, Tony, how you doing this year? And then I found out it's so cool that he's finished states 4 more times. But and then he said one time he drank a beer at Roby because he knew he had the time.
Did he know who you were when you picked him up?
Yeah. Okay. But I was like, there was another guy too that didn't end up breaking 30 hours. Cause I told both of them. I don't know who that dude was, but it was like so funny. And he did. He just did it. He was just like, rah! And it was like he ran the whole way. And he was the last. I think he was the last place finisher that time. It was kind of funny.
You know, driving out here, I just you get a chance to look over the foothills and over to the Sierra, and we'll look. You know, at the foot of the middle of Western states, anyway. And I was thinking how important it really is, this race, to people and accomplishments. And I was kind of thinking that, you know, in my last days before they throw dirt on top of you, thinking about this will be part of it. This will be part of what I call back to, of what did I accomplish? What were some highlights? And it has to be. The endurance racing, the trail racing, the mountain racing, and we call it Western States or Wasatch or Mount Blanc or whatever your setting is. This has a very important part for each one of us, that we come up against something that's bigger than us, that we think it must be, and we accomplish it. And we break it down and we bust through it and we link arms with others and we get knowledge from people and we reach inside of ourselves and we have several spots of failure along the way and we overcome. It's just a beautiful thing. And I'm grateful for the sport, for the mountain, for people like Ann and Sally and Billy that are around it, that share and encourage me. And it's just a great sport. And
it really is.
I love it.
It really is the people. The people really make it. And some of my best friends were forged. I mean, Sally I met at my first 50-mile race, at her 50-mile race, and we started chatting it up. And, you know, now we're best of friends. My other friends, whether I met them through running or they just happened to take up running because they saw our passion, it really is about the people.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it's more, the people, but also just the sharing the passion. I just am this big believer in passion. It can be this. It can be a passion that you like tennis, whatever. I think it's a gift in life if you have a passion. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like that there's like the sport where you can share it with so many other people. It's just not you. So I'm like way big into this passion thing right now. But I mean, I think that's what drove me. I just had a passion for it. So, and it's sharing it. You get really good friends, like lifetime friends, like Tony, that you never would have gotten, I don't know, doing anything else, at least for me.
Well, I use up quilting as some kind of a...
You could do quilting.
I would never have passion for it.
But you could, and I know people who do, and they do quilting. They go to quilting conferences and quilting, and you know, and they're so into it. I love it, and I love hearing about it. I mean, quilting is one I have. I'm coaching one of the kids at the middle school where I coach, and her mother is making her take a knitting class, and so she can't come every day to track because it's an after-school program, and her mom wants her to be well-rounded. That's what, and I'm like so into it that she's developing a passion for knitting, and I'm like, and she doesn't even do her workouts. She can only come to the track 3 days a week or something because she is knitting 2 days a week. But it's like this: she's developing other passions, and I love it.
I was talking to a lady, and I used quilting as an example, and she says, that is my passion. And I thought, oh, no. She opens up her iPhone, and she comes through, and she shows me these quilting things that she does, and it's artwork. It's amazing. She says, it's just not your grandmother's quilt. Look at these images. And it was a buffalo and all this background, and I thought, wow.
I was in an Ultra, and I got in the elevator once, and they were really literally having like this quilting expo thing, and there are all these like quilting people in the and I was like, whoa, this is so cool, because they had such a, you could feel the energy in the elevator,
right?
And it's like, oh, it could be ultra running, it could be, it literally, I was thinking that it could be quilting, and they were, it's beautiful,
right? You could feel that energy. That's the cool thing, right? There's a vibe that comes off people when they find that passion, and all you, like you said, Ann, you can hope that everyone finds that passion. That's, you know, somehow stumble across it in enough time to really enjoy it and embrace it.
That's why I think ultra running was a gift to me. I really, like Aaron having me run that first 30 miles, he gave me the biggest gift that anyone ever can give.
I think too, like I think it is just the idea of just passion. I feel the same way. Like when people are passionate about something, you're drawn to them because it's exciting. And that is what makes life exciting, is they have this motivation and this joy, and a lot of times it's just a natural gift that they have. And I think, you know, you talk to people sometimes where you're like, wow, like you're not motivated or passionate about anything. And but I think sometimes they just need someone to steer them in the right direction, you know, or show them, like,
mm-hmm. take them on a 30 mile run.
Yeah, let's explore that, because I really believe that, you know, everyone has the opportunity to experience greatness. I mean, everything that you want to do in life, like, that greatness is already inside you. You know, you have everything you need to be great and to do something great. And I think that it's all too often and sad that people kind of get these mixed messages that it's only some people, you know, it's only a select few, or they were born that way, or they're so talented. But it's not true. It's like, if you find it and you go after what it is that you love, it doesn't matter what it is, basket weaving, quilting, ultra running, and you do that with all your heart, it's amazing how it shines on to other people. And not only that, it's when you love something so much, it also takes on this, like, it takes on different seasons, you know? So I, you know, you think about running, it's like you're those years that you have competing, but then to turn that into coaching and realize that it doesn't ever stop.
Mm-hmm.
It's that it reaches a greater audience and it inspires other people to kind of hopefully want to go after something that they love too.
So in the ultra running spirit, it's those that are around us finding their passion, allowing other people to have passion, mm-hmm. supporting their passion.
And so also it's fun to, I mean, I like thrive off of Sally, and sorry, I'm hoping I'm not being personal. Yeah. She's like the greatest mother, really. And her passion for her kids is like, I mean, we were like texting each other on Mother's Day, and she sent me like kids of her, I was like, well, what did they, and I even found like things, they were really tacky that I made for my mother for Mother's Day. Sweet. And then she's like, well, look what I just got.
Yeah.
It was like awesome. And that passion for her and her kids, I love it. And I feel like that's a gift. I'm like, oh, yeah, so I'm helping her do Western States. But I get these, like, pictures of her kids on Mother's Day. How lucky am I? I was, like, so happy that day. It was really cool.
So is it possible to have more than one passion at a time? Is that possible?
I think so. Obviously, Sally does.
Yeah, yeah.
She's, like, the greatest mom. I mean, it's, like, so cool.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
You make me cry now. I think you can just be a passionate person. I think once you get excited about something, it's a lot easier to be a little bit more motivated to find out what else is there.
Yeah.
You know, what else is out there. I when I first embarked on trail running, it's like, wow, look at all these cool places I can run on. Like, these mountains are awesome. I didn't even know these trails were here. And even like this year, Western States is the only race I'm doing in the United States. And a big reason is because I want to see the trails in the other parts of the world. And, you know, and Anne's really encouraged me in that too. It's like, now's the time. Like, if you have these opportunities to like use what you love, just loving on the trails, to go and see, you know, another part of the world and meet different people. It's, I would have never thought that running would take me there, you know, but it's a way to travel. And I love traveling, but, all you need is a spark, right? You just need something to get you going.
Yeah, it was a very long, convoluted, windy road to lead me to, you know, discover my love of trail running. Mm-hmm. But once I did, that first trail run I went on with a bunch of, there's like a trail runners club in Los Angeles, mostly older guys. And I was always trepidatious about like actually joining them. And once I did, oh my God, like I was hooked.
How long did it take you? You found out right away, Billy. Sally, Ann, how long did it take you to get hooked? Because it took me some time.
Well, I think like I was a backpacker, so I always liked trails and I love the mountains, and I'm a California girl, so I mean, I'm not a girl anymore, but that's how I always still feel in my heart. I'm like a little 12-year-old, and I love backpacking, and like that first 30, I think that really taught me that I can do the backpacking and see those trails and explore them and still get a bed. Sorry, that's still really nice. I'm not into like doing the, I did the bivvy once. It's like, I'm sorry, I like beds. I like, you know, at night, you like, I know, call me a wimp. I'm not going to do like the JMT and like speed time thing. And it's great for other people, but just knowing, figuring, you know, exploring. It allows you not only to explore your physical, but your mental, I think.
Sally, when you first stepped on the trail, did you know that was your passion, or did it evolve and mature and grow on you a bit and then become solid your passion?
Yeah, I actually the first year I was a bit frightened of the trails. But I always loved like the mountains. Like growing up as a kid, we'd always go to this family camp up in Lake Arrowhead. And I loved it. My mom had a real love for the mountains and just the smell of pine trees, just to see her get so excited. Like every time we'd get up to the mountain and we'd step out of the trail, out of the car, and she would just take in a deep breath and like, oh, the pine trees. And, but that's something I've always remembered. And so I spent a lot of time in the mountains, but the idea of going out on a trail by myself, I was a little afraid of animals. But I think after a year, I knew, you know, the best way to get over a fear is you keep doing it over and over, and you realize that it's your brain that's making it bigger than it mm-hmm. is. It really isn't that big of a deal. And so the more that I got out into the mountains, so a couple years into it, I completely fell in love with it. And it was so much more for just so much more than just being out and being able to run. I think it was always like a good time just to be quiet, you know? And like I said, I do train a lot by myself, but to know that I could have those moments to just be still and, whatever was within me, I've explained this a couple times, but I'm like, that's probably the best way for me to communicate. I feel like when I run, I'm communicating. I know people do it with, you know, writing a song or a poem or through art or, you know, making a really nice meal for somebody. But I feel like when I run, like that is probably the best expression of who I am. And especially in a race too, but it's like that. And that goes back to just on race day, why I look at it is I'm racing within myself, against myself, to be the best that I can be, because I think when I even just go out on the trails, it's there that you kind of find yourself too, and you can kind of pick through who you are and challenge yourself to be better and to really just take time and look at life and ask yourself. We forget to do that. We forget to take time and ask yourself, like, what do I want out of life? And, you know, if this was the last year, you know, that I had on earth, like, what would I do with it? And I think that, you know, I can finish a run and be like so rejuvenated and so excited. Like I want to live it to the fullest. You know, it's like, I want to do everything great. And that's why it's so great having a coach, because Anna has to take that intensity out sometimes. Cause every day I'm like, wee, you know, just like over the top. But I think it's, you know, that there's definitely balance in that too. But yeah, it took a couple years, but I can't imagine not doing it. I can't imagine not being out on the trails and up in the high country. And
I think I'm with you, Sally. It took me a couple of years. What drew me was just the companionship and the social mm-hmm. part of it. I wanted to be with some people and talk to them. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of years to get conditioned and hardened up so that I could really reach out and say, wow, this is nice. You know, I remember the first time that I really felt in shape where I felt almost as if I was riding a horse. You know, I wasn't putting in extreme effort to travel. Mm-hmm. And you guys can call back to that, where you're just moving along and you're talking and you're breathing easy and you're feeling strong. And what a wonderful feeling that is, to be a spectator on the trail and not just a laborer, which I was a true laborer for the first couple of years. And then once you get in shape and learn gait and learn how to manage conditions, it becomes, that's when the passion hit for me.
Was that when you ran your Western States?
It was about 2004-ish, 3-ish. Yeah, it was the RDL. It was my first 100. But in getting ready for that, I found my place. You know, I said, this is good. This is good.
Yeah.
Well, we covered a lot of ground. If these were virtual miles, we could log in these are good, like 12 miles, maybe some hill training, some repeats. We did some good work today. So, Ann, Trayson, thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's always fun to talk to all three of you. I really appreciate you inviting me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Billy Yang, thank you for contributing today, too. Sally, as always, we appreciate it. Scott, we missed you here. You would have had, we had a seat for you and a mic just sitting here. So a missing formation. Was that missing man in formation? That's what we had going on for. So, Trail Runner Nation, thanks for listening, and go out and run.
Moss.